the fifth case of the day, which is Boyavinsky versus Gonzalez.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Kokel. I'm appearing on behalf of Oleksandr Boyavinsky, the petitioner in this matter. This is an immigration case that is an appeal of an immigration judge's denial of political asylum, withholding of removal, as well as protection under the Torture Convention, based on mainly a finding of a lack of credibility of Mr. Boyavinsky in his testimony before the trial court. Now, before the trial court, there were a number of hearings. The first substantial hearing took place on October 31st, 2002, at which time the Immigration Service attempted to establish its grounds of removability, those being under 212A6C of the Immigration Act, claiming that Mr. Boyavinsky falsely claimed to be a United States citizen, as well as the charge of being or coming to the United States without proper documentation. There was never any argument over Mr. Boyavinsky not having proper documentation to enter the United States. Mr. Boyavinsky did challenge the false claim to United States citizenship charge. The government was put to task to establish that charge, and it did so by presenting several documents that were prepared by Border Patrol agents in another state at another time, and those agents did not testify at trial. We objected to those statements in that they were really trying to establish the government's case without having their witnesses there to testify, nor to authenticate these documents, nor to provide a foundation for how these statements were put together. And there were substantial problems, substantial internal errors in these documents, indicating that Mr. Boyavinsky, according to these agents, came to the border not claiming to be a United States citizen, but actually saying that he was a citizen of Mexico and that he was talking to these officers in Spanish. Now, the government has tried to paint some of those errors as mere omissions, but those types of omissions, those types of problems with these documents, especially since the immigration judge put such a strong emphasis on these documents to find that the petitioner was removable as having claimed United States citizenship, those certainly brought into question the reliability of those documents. And those documents not only allowed the judge at the end of that October 31st, 2002 hearing to find that the petitioner was removable on the false claim to U.S. citizenship charge, but in addition, it also formed the bedrock of the judge's subsequent finding of a lack of credibility. A lack of credibility that came about after two further hearings. The judge found that Mr. Boyavinsky lacked credibility in presenting his asylum claim on January 6, 2004, as well as on January 8, 2004. And with respect to the lack of credibility, the judge indicated a number of reasons or a number of concerns that the judge had or perceived with Mr. Boyavinsky's testimony, a number of them which, from court precedent, from this circuit's precedent, would be deemed not to be sufficient, such as providing a statement which was 900 words long or no more than that, and then being on the witness stand and testifying about all the events in that statement for roughly 8 hours over a period of 2 days. The judge found that the testimony went much further than the statement. However, in this jurisdiction, that by itself would not call into credibility the petitioner's claim. In addition, the judge also found a number of other issues regarding the presentation of the case as problematic, starting with the false claim to U.S. citizenship charge and feeling that the petitioner should have no reason to challenge that, especially since there were records from the government that were presented before the court. Some of these records also included a rap sheet from the FBI that indicated that Mr. Boyavinsky was arrested on January 1st, 2000 and charged with violation of 18 U.S.C. 911, falsely claiming United States citizenship. He was in Ukraine on January 1st, 2000, but this document was allowed in along with the other I-213 statements presented by the government, as well as other statements assembled by Border Patrol agents in another state at another time. That allowed the judge to then go on and find pretty much everything that the respondent or that the petitioner testified about to lack credibility or to be implausible. Some of the other things that the immigration judge found to be implausible, which are supported by the petitioner's proffered witnesses. Issues regarding how he was treated by different groups that he feels were connected to the police in the Ukraine, and in that part of the Ukraine, the western part of the Ukraine, there is a strong anti-Semitic feeling among the population, and his wife is Jewish. Our expert witness that we wanted to have testify during these proceedings and was ready to testify by telephone and who submitted a very detailed affidavit about the plausibility and consistency of Mr. Boyanivsky's claim was not allowed to testify eventually at the end of the day because the immigration judge found that the petitioner's lack of credibility in the judge's mind left the expert witness's testimony without any basis.
The affidavit was received into the record,
yes.
However?
It was received into the record, and the way that the judge dealt with it was by saying that his opinion is lost on this case because I don't believe the petitioner's testimony, which is problematic, terribly problematic, because that's the judge's position was premised on not believing what the petitioner was stating at trial and then not allowing any corroborative evidence to come in to support that. And what evidence was allowed to remain in written form, the judge completely discounted and did not go through to indicate how and where it did not support, it did not corroborate the petitioner's claim.
So that's the basis for your position that he was prejudiced by the exclusion of that lay testimony and the expert's testimony.
Terribly, terribly prejudiced. The judge made no bones about it that credibility was on the line from day one. At each hearing, the judge made it a point to say, your credibility is on the line. That's fine. That's fair. That's part of these proceedings. But at the end of the day, when the court ignored this testimony, did not take it into account in its decision, it makes it very clear from the petitioner's standpoint that the judge had predetermined that the petitioner lacked credibility and found a means to get to that end by not allowing this corroborative testimony to come in, which is necessary under Seventh Circuit precedent when there is a finding of an adverse credibility determination. The petitioner has to come forward with some explanation or corroborative evidence, and the petitioner did. But the way the immigration judge was able to avoid hearing these witnesses was by reconvening the January 6, 2004 hearing, which ended at roughly 8:30 p.m. when the lights went off in the court, reconvening it at 9 o'clock on Friday morning and telling counsel, the only way I'm going to continue it any further is if you have a conflict, counsel. Counsel's got a conundrum. What does counsel do? Your Honor, my witnesses are not available to testify 36 hours later. They took the entire day off of work on the 6th to be ready to testify. It's now 36 hours later. They have jobs. They teach in New York. They can't take today off. And with that, the immigration judge was allowed, or the immigration judge bypassed all of their statements, discounted them, and thereby prejudice the petitioner in this case. I do want to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Good morning. May it please the court. Lael Smith on behalf of the government. This court should affirm the immigration judge's finding that petitioner is removable as charged in his notice to appear, as well as the immigration judge's finding that the petitioner did not sustain his burden of proof by presenting credible evidence that he is eligible for asylum. Now, in this case, the petitioner had made two attempts to come to the United States. He has been charged with two grounds of removability. He does not contest the other charge, and he has received three separate hearings, one just for the removability charge on the false claim, And this case has been rescheduled, according to my count, at least six times in the course of several hearings beginning in February of 2001.
And yes, there have been several hearings, and he's testified. He testified at length during the course of those hearings, but there was certain critical evidence that the court excluded, that the immigration judge excluded, and that evidence really related to the credibility determination. Wasn't that excluded evidence critical to corroborating his claim of persecution?
Well, it depends on, in this case, the immigration judge, for example, with respect to the purported expert, Dr. Birds, the immigration judge determined that another continuance, in this case, just to hear additional testimony. I think the immigration judge did actually consider that evidence. He just determined not to give it a lot of weight in light of the fact that he had found the petitioner's testimony not to be credible. And the problem, for example, with that affidavit, he found, the immigration judge determined that the affidavit was based on the allegations of, on the petitioner's allegations, and the problem was he had found petitioner's allegations to lack credibility.
Yeah, but what about the dilemma counsel was in terms of the witnesses had been available to testify, did not testify. Then when the court wanted them to appear, they were from out of town, and that was a problem. So those witnesses were excluded.
They were not available on the final hearing of January 8th, I believe it was, 2004, which was, they were not available on that hearing. So in that case, the immigration judge had to decide, should he go ahead and continue the case for yet another hearing or go ahead and issue a decision? And the immigration judge decided, based on the fact that there was lengthy hearings, several hearings, and he'd found petitioner lacked credibility, that it would not have served a meaningful purpose given the lack of credibility. I think the other problem in this case is it's not been shown in the briefing how the additional witnesses, they have not identified who these witnesses were in the briefs, who these witnesses would have been, and it has not been identified what these witnesses would have corroborated. We don't know. See, the problem is, in order to establish a due process violation, you have to show that there's prejudice, and you have to show that the proceedings would have been different. The outcome of the proceedings would somehow have changed. We do not know how these witnesses would have corroborated petitioner's claims or how they would have saved his credibility.
Well, apparently there's an affidavit in the record from the expert witness who was
Dr. Birds.
Excluded. And is there any similar affidavit or offer of proof regarding the other witnesses in the record?
There was. I looked through the record again at the, during the last hearing and also in the administrative appeal. Based on the appeal and in the brief, it's not clear. Petitioner does not identify who the witnesses are,
I thought the expert witness was Dr. Jeffrey Birds.
Birds, right.
Testified that marrying a Jewish person, that the petitioner was viewed as a Jew lover in Ukrainian society and would be subjected to violence directed at perceived ethnic traitors. So that's pretty specific in terms of what the witness would have testified to.
That is specific as to country conditions in Ukraine. That is, our position is that is general because that just indicates, yes, there's no dispute. Yes, there's a history of discrimination
right.
in that country.
And isn't it contradictory that the immigration judge accepted this expert's affidavit for its truth but found the statement to be worthless and lost on this case? Isn't that contradictory?
No, because the problem in this case, the evidence, this affidavit from this expert, does not go to the specifics of this petitioner's asylum claim. This expert would only be testifying as to his knowledge of conditions in Ukraine based on the petitioner's allegations.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the evidence in the record that supports the immigration judge's finding that the documentation presented, evidence that he was beaten is untrustworthy? There was some documentation submitted on that, and the immigration judge said it was untrustworthy. What's the evidence to support that conclusion?
I'm not sure which documentation you are referring to.
Didn't he submit? I think he submitted some records. I'm not sure if they were hospital records.
This goes to the issue of credibility, right? Okay.
Right.
For example, yes, he submitted several. For example, there was a hospital certificate.
Right.
He submitted a police certificate. I think this was an example of where the immigration judge found that his testimony conflicted with his supporting documentation. For example, he testified that he received a police certificate on September 21st of 1998 after his car was stolen. He testified that he kept it, put it in his pocket, brought it home, and that his wife later mailed it to him. However, the record shows that this certificate that he indicated that was the one that he received was issued on March 1st, 2000, more than a year after he went to the police station. He had also testified that this certificate was, in fact, the same document that he personally received back on September 21st of 1998. This damages his claim because it damages his claim that he was summoned to the police station in the first place, which in turn caused him to question whether or not his car was ever stolen, which in turn caused him to question, was he ever really attacked for
reporting
it stolen?
Well, this one of the witnesses excluded, this Vasil Yakovishek, said he witnessed the petitioner being beaten by a group of men in the Ukraine and recognized one of the attackers as a Ukrainian police officer, and he found him lying on the ground bloody and unconscious after the beating and called an ambulance.
Well, in this case, the petitioner has not argued to the board or to this court exactly that the affiant that you have identified, he has not identified this person. He has not shown how this person would have corroborated his claim.
Well, my point, though, was the immigration judge said, you know, found him incredible on the point of whether he was beaten, and here was a witness who was excluded that could have corroborated that.
Well, the other problem
is, so wasn't that then some critical evidence that the immigration judge should not have excluded?
Well, I don't know if the immigration judge actually excluded that document. He may have admitted it, but given it limited weight in light of his finding that the petitioner lacked credibility.
No, I'm talking about the witness, because the witness that I identified, isn't that the witness that was excluded? Maybe I have the facts. The lay witness that was excluded,
right.
That's the one who was going to testify about the beating. He called the ambulance, and unless I'm wrong on the facts.
I don't recall exactly. It's a fairly lengthy record.
That's that Vasil Yakovishek.
Right. I don't recall, to be honest. Honestly, don't recall if he was actually excluded. The problem was they were not present at that hearing, and the immigration judge determined not to continue the case again. There's a problem with the other purported witness, and I think this was the other purported witness, Igor Zarychnyank. Sorry for the pronunciation. But anyway, he presented an affidavit claiming that that petitioner was taken to the militia and harassed with prosecution. But as the immigration judge noted in his decision, the petitioner never testified that he was taken to the militia, which, according to his testimony, meant the police, or threatened with prosecution at any time because of his marriage.
Yeah, but my point was this witness that was excluded is a lay witness who would have significantly corroborated him, and there wasn't, in terms of the immigration judge's conclusion, there wasn't anything contrary that suggested that he was not beaten.
Well, this then goes to the immigration judge's discretion. The immigration judge, you know, and this is an issue that if the court determines it has jurisdiction to review, should the immigration judge have continued the case as a matter of discretion? It's our position that, you know, the immigration judge has broad discretion over, you know, the course and conduct of the immigration proceedings. This case was pending since February 2001. It had been reset, according to my account, at least six different times for filing of applications, presentation of evidence, and testimony. There were three separate hearings just for testimony, one of which was just for the issue of the fraud charge. Under these circumstances, petitioner was not denied the right to a full and fair hearing. He had many opportunities to present witnesses and to testify in support of his claim. I would like, since I am running out of time, I would like to just go to the issue, unless the court has any other questions on credibility or continuance. I would like to just note that with respect to the charge of removability, there are two charges. He does not contest the entry without documents charge. Because he does not contest the other charge, the court really does not need to consider the charge of removability based on false claim to United States citizenship. And even if it does, it's the immigration judge's finding is clearly supported by substantial evidence because the petitioner has admitted in a sworn statement to a Ukrainian interpreter that he did claim to be a United States citizen. And also, I would like to add, I see that my time is up.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much. Smith, do you have to, I'm sorry, Mr. Coke, do you have anything to add?
Briefly, Your Honor. The issue regarding the continuance I was the counsel at that hearing, and if you look at the transcript, there is an enormous swath of paper that goes from the petitioner finishing his redirect and then suddenly resting. There was a heated debate. It was a heated argument in court regarding whether or not this case should be continued. And again, the conundrum counsel was in was, does counsel tell the court, yes, counsel has a conflict on the 8th and therefore cannot make it, or does counsel represent the facts as true? Your Honor, we cannot have our witnesses ready for today. This case comes down to a meaningful opportunity to be heard and how that affects the petitioner's case with respect to his fears of being returned to the Ukraine.
Was there an offer of proof made about what the witnesses would have testified to, apart from the affidavit from the expert, which apparently is in the record?
The specific offers of proof would have been in the verbal offer of proof would have been in that section that's not apparently wasn't recorded. There were statements that were made during that part of, apparently when the tape was turned off, that reflect even more so that the petitioner did not have adequate means to have his claim heard. There were pre-hearing statements submitted in advance of these hearings, and those did outline who will be testifying and what they'll be testifying about.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.